presentation. Maybe just members, in terms of all the documents that was distributed just to also indicate, I think we also received, in terms of the pack, there were three, I think, submissions. There was one from the Banking Association of South Africa, one from the Right to Know campaign, as well as from Sasol. So I just want to indicate that as well to members. And I think we also distributed the copy of the old keyboard acts as well for members, just to ensure that they file with all the issues. Right, so members, we can maybe go to questions for clarification and other matters to the honourable member. Right, members, honourable Ramatlakane, honourable Molabatsi, honourable Marke, and honourable Flongu, and honourable Dierlingers. Right, let's go for the first round.
Chair, my question is probably not quite dealing with the presentation as yet. In the presentation of the legal advice from Parliament, there was an area that dealt with what is broadly characterized as preemptive introduction. Now, I just wanted to find out, because Honorable Mbele also acknowledged this fact, that there is a process, there has been a process reported, and there is a process of the renewal process of the National Keypoint Act. So I don't know whether it's good enough for that, but maybe you could ask the Secretariat. Just for not a long presentation, just give us a quick brief, kind of 5 minutes, because generally they also deal with the process of review on behalf of the minister. If they could just briefly brief us about how far is that process, the review process of the same issue, basically. That's what I thought we should, before I even go into the actual question, because I think perhaps there's a need to complete the picture for us to be able to let in the discussion with a complete picture.
It seems that just that input that I'm going to welcome. You're also welcome. Just introduce your delegation and then welcome.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you. Honourable members, my name is Dawn Bell. I'm the Chief Director of Legislation in the Civilian Secretariat for Police. And with me is the main drafter of this particular bill. On my left is Brigadier van der Walt. He's from SAPS. We find it very important to have SAPS with us in drafting our bills, because they are actually the implementers of the bill, so we need to make sure that the bills that we that are passed are actually implementable. And to the far left is Milton Kwana. He's a director in the Civilian Secretariat for Police. And on the particular question about the honourable member, I'm going to ask Brigadier van der Walt to brief you, because he is actually the main drafter and really brought like a working draft to us before we actually started with the bill. So if I'm allowed to, Chairperson? Okay.
Just maybe for clarification, not the draft of this bill that is a private minister bill, of the other bill that has been positioned earlier this year. That's just to make a distinction. Brigadier, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. Thanks for the opportunity. Chairperson, we in the police have started the review process of the National Key Points Act some time ago, because we realized that there were several issues regarding the National Key Points Act, not only the constitutional matters, as was recently shown by the Right to Know campaign court case, but also other issues. When we looked at the National Key Points Bill and compared that to other jurisdictions, other countries, internationally, there's a move to move away from only looking at national security when it comes to critical infrastructure. If I may expand on that, the idea, and I think the international trend, is to have regard to more areas than national security, such as service delivery, water, health, electricity, etc. All matters which can effectively bring a country to a standstill on a national, provincial, or even a local basis. We started with a review of the National Key Points Act in terms of the physical security of such critical infrastructure. This draft bill that we've worked on and since with the drafting team of the Civilian Secretariat also covers the definition of critical infrastructure, obviously. There are certain structures that are created by the bill, so there's not the national key point situation where the minister just declares a place. There is a process in terms of which critical infrastructure may be identified. The South African Police Service will continue to administer those processes where the identification takes place or where a private institution, for instance, wishes to be declared critical as critical infrastructure. That application will be considered and reviewed and all the necessary research done before it's referred to a critical infrastructure committee, as it's referred to at this point in the bill, in the draft bill. One must just remember that the executive hasn't yet completed the approval process of this draft bill that we are busy with, so I'm obviously just saying what is at the moment in the bill. This critical infrastructure council, as it's called in the draft bill, will consist of, obviously, public participants or representatives from the various government departments who play a role either in national security or in the processes related to that specific type of critical infrastructure, whether it be health, water, etc. Then there are also...
I don't want to go maybe into the detail of your process, but maybe I think the question from Honourable Ramaphosa was, where are we? Is it currently with Cabinet subcommittee? Well, we just want to get that aspect.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, I thought the background would do, but thank you. The process is currently that there is a preliminary certification from the state law advisors on the bill. The bill also, or the draft bill rather, also has to be approved by the Cabinet Committee still. It has served before the committee, but there were certain referrals on it. And that process is now within the, hopefully within the foreseeable immediate future, going to take place. If that approval is obtained, the bill will be published for public comment, and this period of the consideration of the comments and inclusion of those comments, etc., in the draft bill, it will be tabled in Parliament.
Thank you, sir. Right, Honourable Mishkani, are you happy with that response? Right. Let's then go to the other. I think you've got a follow up, or are you Honourable Mbele? Yes,
Sorry for interrupting the Honourable Member's process. I just wanted to add on, because the key points that Honourable Matlakane anchored his question in was around the question of whether this was preemptive, and we have some background from the Civilian Secretariat. But I just wanted to sketch out, we wasn't in the presentation, because I didn't want to overload too much history to this, but it's just to remember that this private members bill is the continuation of a process that started in 2012 under the previous parliament, when the bill was introduced by the former leader of the parliamentary opposition. All that happened is that the bill lapsed because that parliamentary term ended with the elections. And so this was the first opportunity to then bring it back in the pipeline and to keep pushing forward. So there's a longer history to this in terms of the parliamentary process that must be borne in mind. Thank you, Chair.
That's information we appreciate. Honourable Ramaphosa, then Honourable Mulabatsi, then Honourable Mafi, then Honourable Mutlongo Mdiyotlase.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. I guess we are in a stage where we engaging with the presentation. Okay. No, Chair, the first thing that I want just to say, to indicate, and I think that Honourable Mbele would also talk to that later when he responds, that it is
of course, let our public knowledge and this committee knowledge that there is a review process currently. In fact, in terms of our earlier program, there was a discussion that by the second half of this year we'd have to consider this particular draft. So there is a matter of knowledge amongst us that there is actually a wider, broader review process that is looking at this particular act with a view to repealing and introducing more quite comprehensive legislation. That's the first point. So in terms of the process that we're embarking upon, surely it has to take that process into account. We have to consider that, that there is a process on the table that is going to be key to this committee. This committee is going to be dealing with that particular process. That's the first point I want to make. So, and therefore, for me, I don't know and I don't see the committee running two processes. How are we going to run two processes? The conclusion part of the presentation, of course, it was all that a broader consultation, public consultation, engagement with this process was addressing this particular bill to repeal, and the process is going to repeal. And the process that we're going to be embarking upon soon is going to require that we also do the same in terms of quite broad, in fact, in a much more broader scale. So in a way that we're going to end up into running on the two tracks, same thing, but the other one's slightly narrower and the other one much more broader. I don't know whether that is probably what the committee would like to do, but there are things that worries me in the bill itself, which I want to just put on the table. And here the evidence is not being provided. There is an issue about the disclosure, the issue about key point issues that the committee, this committee will then have to be given this disclosure and they will have to be engaged in this process to make their determinations. Now, I don't know anywhere in the world where key points, government strategic key points, is a matter of public publication. I don't know. I tried to see what was the process in the U.S. and I couldn't actually get into it much, but I tried to see what was happening in the Britain and I couldn't get much in terms of what the key seriously this issue that we're dealing with happening here in South Africa. I was wondering, what's the evidence of this? For us to be able to engage with something like this, we need to know, because it will be, I don't see that happening in any other state. So the bar of transparency here, it's actually lifted to a position that is probably an acceptable position that nobody can ever live with. So immediately that kind of position then start pouring water on the intention that probably were good intentions to start engaging around the review process. So, now, Chair, safety, which I think Ms. The Honorable Mbele raises, which I thought it was telling, was the issue about the declaration around the Inkandla issue as national key point. So when this is now an attempt to say we want to nip this in the bud because this has been in the past and therefore we're going to do this in the way we should do it is a transparent approach and this is now a private member's bill. So I find that one to be the unmasking of what may have been masked a private member's bill. So when I ask the question, if that is then the case, it's are we seriously dealing with this particular question, or are we in the kind of a gimmick type of
engaging with the process, quite serious issues. That, for me, whetted my appetite in a negative side, to say, for probably this is now, and the law process of lawmaking can't be based on a narrow viewing of the situation. It's dealing with the country, dealing with the kind of critical issues. So let me just say this, as I'm going to, but the issue of expenditure aspect, the issue of, and I did hear the legal advice saying that the department may be well placed through this, but if a member, through a process of consultations in terms of determining the bill, it's a responsibility of the introducer of the bill also to do the analysis implications, the financial implications, including the engagement and consultation around those engagement, about those financial implications. I didn't find them, but I find that there is a need for that to be funded. So maybe the Honorable Mbele would speak to that. The last thing is our appeal process and the list that has already been listed. I think we are running ahead of ourselves. Yeah. We're running ahead of ourselves with this process. What I think I want to end my engagement here when, and I have read the bill in detail. And I have read it in detail. I have my new questions, and you see the core determination is unheard of, that the executive role would be performed outside of the executive, rather by the functional committee. When the executive responsibility is incumbent on the executive in terms of the constitution to do that, including the governance part of it and governing. So the bill suggests that including this new body that is being put together. And I wonder, who are these going to be, these people? Who are they going to be? Because they are going to be walking around with a state secret. I don't know even the level of them that who they're going to be. If we are unable to trust the constitutionally people that are being put through a constitutional mess, that was, we don't trust these other ones, we'll trust this other one better than the other. So it's a core determination, it's especially introduction of executive by stealth through the bill, and you get functionaries to be seized with this serious responsibilities. Now, I would think, say, that this is we bite more than what we can do. And therefore, my last part is this, that I think as a committee we should say that this process should find itself in a way integrated in the broader process of reviewing of the legislation that is currently underway. And at a good part of the interventions that comes in here would be easily be considered through that particular process. But as a standalone, I think there are some serious weaknesses, in particular including the issue about the preemptive. I think the cat was let out of the bag when it says the minister said this, and this is what we have not been able to do. And this is after all new term. This is a new term which receive new kind of mandate. So it was not carried through of items. Any item that is on that this term, it is a term. And I know that Honorable Mbele had the suggestion of making it drag along. But it can't drag along. It just expire and then it's a new introduction. So therefore, there is no way that we can say that this is an issue that has got no preemptive stance. It is actually the preempting of the process. So my last part is that I think we should find a way, as in the process to integrate this process in the broad process that is away. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ramadikon, Honourable Abadzi.
Chairperson, from the explanation of the Secretariat, who do have a bill in the pipeline, and if we are now going to be dealing with the bill here, it's like putting the cart in front of the donkey, which is not right for us. But my point here is, you Honourable Mbele, you haven't told us about the cost of this bill. My next one is, can you give us a comparison of this bill as compared to the one of the late Ambrosini? May his soul rest in peace. Just give us a comparison of in line with this rule 235A. And thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Waki, and then Honourable Mishlom, and then Honourable Rivers.
Thank you, Chairperson. My understanding of national key point is that those critical infrastructure, those, to give an example, which would be the first ones to be destroyed if there's war, meaning that those are the ones that will be targeted. And the best people who are placed to know and understand those critical infrastructures, as a definitely are not civilians. Civilians, I mean, it's not private people like Honorable Mbele who can determine in relation to that. It means the department is best placed in terms of dealing with the issues like those. They are the ones that must implement. They are the ones that must deal with the finances, or are the best placed to know how much the costing of the implementation of the bill. So if I was to repeat, I don't think any private member or any civilian is in a good position to deal with such issues. Well, as my colleague said, we don't have the best practice here. We were not told. But those that are busy with the bill are saying they checked the best practice before they came up with the draft. So it means the most reliable of all would be the draft bill that we are already expecting from the side of the department. So I was just suggesting that we mustn't even get into the bill itself. I thought we were dealing with the desirability. It's very clear that in terms of substance, it is desirable. Nobody is not saying that. But in terms of the other, what will I call them? The other issues that describe desirability, it already falls off. In substance, we agree that's why we have a draft. So I was just suggesting that we don't even continue debating the content or the substance of the bill because we are going to waste time. And I would submit that the bill, as by Honorable Mbele, failed the desirability clause. And then from here, let's just follow the processes according to the presentation that we got from the state advisor is that when if it fails the desirability, then we are to report to Parliament. We must give a, if I understood it very well, according to, we must take it to Parliament and explain there was this type of a bill and it fails the desirability clause. I would genuinely suggest that we don't even continue because it has already failed the desirability clause. So we need it from here, otherwise we will just be wasting time. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Honorable Shongo.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in the first place, one will need to thank the initiative taken by the Honorable Member in terms of pursuit of this. However, one will also be mindful of the fact that as a committee we need to be asking ourselves a very honest and genuine question. What are our experiences in the past few months or years in terms of definition of what really forms part of the national key points? Or it can just become a political football that one can kick from the side to that side whenever he or she feels like, which then comes at the end of the day to undermine our own integrity as a nation and as a country. I'm raising this because even President Bill Clinton, when there was a testing of a massive bomb secretly by the military in the U.S., he says, no, this was not done. The hiding away of this from the eyes of the public wasn't done on the basis of law in terms of national security of the country. It was purely done to protect the state from embarrassment. Then that's a political game, not necessarily a footprint of law in terms of security of the country or the nation. We feel this is the country, we cannot move away from that. We feel the students in Parliament peacefully coming to the Parliament and then the reaction, subsequent reaction. These bills must inform our mind to say, and I am tempted to quote the explanation for the presentation made by Honorable Mungango here, who said, we have never repealed, we have never repealed the notion that suggests Parliament's precinct is a people's area, which means it is in contrast with the laws that were legislated prior to the dawn of democracy in 1994. Therefore, then, having said that, from the presentation of the lady who made us clear about the process of private members' view tabling, there is a notion of desirability, which I think is very central, Mr. Chairperson. Here is very clear to me that there cannot be a bill on top of another bill in terms of that desirability. Only thing which I think this committee will have to do is to say, informed by the experiences of the last few months, what have we learned as a committee? And that then puts pressure on us to place before Parliament to say, let the minister present the bill to all of us, not necessarily the Portfolio Committee on Police, because as the Honorable Marker says, you know, it's during the era of war, our national dams here that supply us with water will be the first target in order to make or compel us to submit to whatever aggression by the enemy. And there are other areas, installations in the country. Unfortunately, from the side of government, we don't have even the intelligence, chief of intelligence general at the moment. We will also be in a position to highlight us about the dangers of what needs to be made public and what not, because of security matters. And as a person that stands before high sensitive areas of security, and also what else? It is wrong, I think, Honorable Magere, so we can just as members of parliament be dictated to by any department, state department, without us as lawmakers exercising our legal role and the mandate of ensuring that the interests of the public are well protected. Otherwise, we can be open with serious kind of ones, whereby state departments can actually just run amok, and finally we will actually find ourselves being a bureaucratic run state, where people's voices are suppressed at whatever cost, because of, then we cannot run away from that thing. So we have got a democratic right and a legal right as public representatives to actually be in charge and in control over the process. Not as the so-called selected few ministerial committees. We are here as an oversight over those executive members by law. So we cannot actually then abrogate that responsibility. It will be totally unheard of in any democracy. Not unless we are in a state of dictatorship, like other undemocratic states, North Korea as well, etc. Now, but the key legal footprint here is the desirability of this, which I think we have been well advised. So therefore, Mr. Chairperson, without any further waste of time, I think whatever the member has prepared, it will be correct to say in coming next few weeks, we must be able to place before the minister the agency of this particular bill to be presented to all of us, which I think maybe it will be the joint security cluster, so that we can then be able to debate and come out with a clear understanding of what it, then maybe we can borrow from what the member has rapped, because it's not correct and agent that we come to conclusion at a nation of the Republic to say what really constitutes national key points. Cannot then call Manchongo family house in Lady Smith and say that is a national key point because I'm a member of parliament. That is my private property. So it does happen with everyone. So we must never actually then treat things selectively here. It is completely wrong. We must then be able to call a spade, so that we are then be able to protect our own democracy, but without us compromising national security of our own country. Yes, it's quite correct that we cannot selectively say, based or informed by one area, we can then jump to conclusion to say, that for example, let us just be so transparent in that, in that way that we even declare how many security installations we have located where, because it would mean that we are betraying our own country. But we cannot actually allow abuse of our own democracy under the so-called pretext of national key points, as it has been experienced. I think that is our bottom line, particularly as AFF, that we have actually experienced something very wrong in our country. And it is for this committee also to acknowledge that. Then use the muscle of the committee to pressurize the parliament as a whole to say, let us actually bring this matter to rest. By the minister not just allowing this, we don't have an intelligence general in place, we don't even understand what makes delays of such a simple thing. Because in the nature of that, it makes it very difficult for this whole thing to be finalized with speed. Otherwise, we will have political proliferations from now and again, which are unnecessary, has been weakening the very state organs. Because some of us will be willing to actually protect our own jobs at the expense of the national interests of our country. That is our submission that we are making, to say we must bring this matter to rest and we must use, and we have got courts of law, even only if the minister cannot, and honorable member, be able to provide us within the determined time frame to present this particular bill to us, so that we are able to actually then see what really constitutes national points. It won't be mean to say that we are saying that the minister must tell us where are the installations that actually seek to secure our own country. But what really defines national key points? That is very central to this particular debate. So, on the basis of that, Mr. Chairperson, I think the bottom line is our ability tells us that we cannot have a bill on another bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Shlomo, for your contribution. Honourable Yenais.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think it's important for us to separate the two processes involved in the private member bill. In the first instance, this specific discussion is about the desirability to proceed with the bill, not the content of the bill. We're not going through a clause-by-clause deliberation, not discussing the merits of arguments made by or put forward in the bill. So it would be premature and unfair to compare, for example, a board proposed by this piece of legislation and a board proposed by a piece of legislation which is, as far as we can tell, not yet even in existence. But I think it's important for us to confine ourselves to this discussion about whether there is a need for legislation in this regard. That is the primary purpose of the deliberations today. And I think it's well established that there is a need for legislation that addresses the situation when it comes to national key points. It is the concerns were first raised in 2012 when it was pointed out that the Act is outdated, that it refers, for example, to the Official Secrets Act of 1956, which has long since been repealed, and that it really does go against the spirit of the 1996 Constitution, in particular Section 32, which speaks to access to information. This was echoed then later by Deputy Minister of Public Works, Jeremy Cronin, who in February 2013 then said that the Act needs to be looked at. It's anachronistic, it's an incredibly problematic piece of legislation, and he is also of the view that it is or might well be unconstitutional. Minister Tesla then went on through a process. There was a committee set up, and he told the House that the National Key Points Act has been criticized in the recent past for being based on older part of legislation. It became clear to us that this Act needed to be revised for various reasons. Key amongst these is the need to align with the Constitution and other more recent legislation. In addition, there's been criticism that the actual use of the Act to address infrastructure security is inappropriate. That was a submission made by former Minister of Police. The legislative review was then put on hold because of the election and because the full Parliament would have come to an end. Subsequently, President Jacob Zuma himself in August last year urged that the legislative review of the national key points should be expedited. Are we already more than a year away from that? I think there's broad consensus across all political parties that this Act is in desperate need of review, and therefore it is desirable that Parliament, as the legislative authority, undertake such. And this is an initiative that was then now taken up in the private members' bill by Honourable Mbele. Also, it is worth noting that this bill has a history that dates back to the Fourth Parliament. And it is worth noting that because it's informative. And also we even saw that this Parliament revived two bills that lapsed at the end of the Fourth Parliament, which the Parliament can do. There's no need to discard a bill and pretend that it never existed. This Parliament, for example, revived two bills early on, one I think was related to financial matters, which then didn't necessitate all process to be brought to start it again. So it's instructive and informative to take note that this bill predates the Fifth Parliament in a very similar way that, for example, the Protection of State Information Bill was before Parliament for a good two or three terms. It is desirable further because our Constitution places a premium on the right to access to information. That's not the only thing that this bill seeks to address. And it's also informative to note that the Jandberg High Court ordered the Minister of Police to publish the list of national key points. And we got that list. There's 204 of them. And the importance of that is because we heard, for example, people were arrested outside Groenteveld prison and told that they can't take photos of it because it's national key point. Prisons are not on the list. People protesting outside magistrates' courts were told that they can't do this because it's a national key point. Magistrates' courts are not on the list. There's also a glaring inconsistency which necessitates a rational process in identifying, in consultation with all stakeholders, a national key point. For example, only three of the many airports across the country are national key points, Cape Town, Durban, and Johannesburg. There's no mention of Bloemfontein or Polokwane or all of those things. So I think, broadly, it is very clear that there is a need to address this, what I would call a glaring gap in the existing legislation. And in considering desirability, I would caution that anyone opening a rule book today would see that there is no rule to revise. doesn't exist. The native version of the rule book, there is no rule 235. It could be informative, it could be considered, but it is not enforced in effect. There is no rule 235. And it was clear that when the interim rules were adopted by a resolution of the House in 2012, that it was also not the intention of the House to include those guidelines. Otherwise, they would have revived the interim rules that were introduced. And I think it's important to emphasize that in considering the desirability of a piece of legislation introduced by a member, that we should guard against unreasonably, and which was later found in the Honourable Ambrosini's case, unlawfully limiting a member's right to introduce legislation and for it to go through the process. Especially when we are doing that, we should be mindful that because this committee is going through a process, that whatever we decide should be reasonable, rational, and valid.
The Honourable Ambrosini's with what it works.
Yes, Chief. I think the Honourable Redelin is, all the things he's mentioning is quite known to everybody. And it's definitely not helping the process. Thanks.
You can continue.
Sir, I don't understand the objection. I don't see why it's not within my right or reasonable to emphasize certain points that have been put to the table. I know some members discomfort with it, but I think it's important for me to go through these points in emphasizing why I personally believe, and also we as a party, the DA, believe that it is desirable for this legislation to proceed. There is, of course, there is talk of a process that is running parallel to this, but we can also not be held ransom by undue delay. I do not see why, in the absence of any real substantive legislative proposal on the table from the executive, why it is not desirable for us to proceed with this process. And therefore, I would argue that it would be desirable and it should be recommended that we report to the House that there is a need for legislation in this regard. I think that's well established, and that the process should continue. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think let us just take the first round. We'll come back to the second round. Members, I just got two short questions. The one is, just my checklist in terms of legislation, whether National Treasury was consulted, and then the other issue is in terms of the consultation in drafting the bill, who was consulted. But we'll come to the second round. We will go to our mobility to deal with the first round. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and to the members for their questions. I'm just making the final notes of the Chair's questions. Okay. That's pretty much. Chair, noting that technically the interaction should be on desirability of the bill on the grounds outlined by Ms. Swartz, but I do very much welcome the opportunity to expand and motivate about the substantive and detailed points of the bill, because I think that clarity for the members would hopefully be persuasive and clear up any current misalignments between my understanding and theirs. I think I answered Honourable Ramatavada's question about preemptiveness in terms of the history of this bill going back to 2012. And the point has already been mentioned about how bills can be revived from Parliament to Parliament, and there is precedence for that. His first point or question was around a two-track or parallel process that would possibly come onto the committee's plate. Obviously, that's not desirable, and that's not the intention. This would ideally dovetail, or as a term that the Honourable Member used, integrates with whatever comes from the Ministry down pipeline at a later stage. The trouble right now is we don't know firstly what the content of that is or the time frame at which it would happen. And so given the need right now and the long-standing, long-identified need for such a bill, there's no grounds on which this cannot start the process now, and then in the course of consultation, the ministry's inputs could then dovetail and be integrated into that. And that also speaks, if I may jump around a little bit, to a point made by the Honourable Mthongo, that there cannot be a bill on top of another bill. Quite right. That would not make sense. But the point is, this is the only bill on the table right now. There's nothing on top of anything else. Honourable Ramatlakane also had questions around whether it was desirable or if there were valid grounds for public access to the information that would be contained in the register. The first point is to say that, as was hinted at by the Honourable Riedling case, when the SA Historical Archive and Rights to Know took their court to care, their case force, to be given the list of national key points, the court did make comments that there are no grounds for not releasing simply the list of the national key points. Nobody is saying they have to outline the details, security measures, the expenditure, and all that sensitive information. It's simply about the list. So the mere fact of the list in itself is not contested, and the court has backed that up. And that's precisely what the board has taken into account, because in terms of the unclassified reports that would be tabled to Parliament by the Minister, it only specifies the total number of what would be critical infrastructure. This is clause 12, the name of each critical infrastructure and details of whether each one is state-owned or private-owned. So that's all people would know from the reports, is how many, the name, private or state-owned, and the courts have always been clear that there's nothing wrong with that. His next point about whether or not the mention of Ghana was an unmasking of the real and more malevolent, perhaps, intention of the bill. No, that's not correct. Part of me wishes that perhaps I did have that kind of devious, scheming mastermind, but absolutely not. I mean, the substance and the principle basis for this bill is evident to everyone. But I would emphasize that Ghana, of course, is a very relevant factor, but not the sole one in motivating for this bill, because we do know that in initial efforts by the government to resist information about Ghana going out into the public realm or photos being taken, they tried the National Key Point Act unjustifiably, without basis and irrationally. So it was removing the possibility for that kind of twisting and turning and distorting happening, and just a very clear framework on the table as to how things should work. His next question was about whether there have been cost analysis implications, and this also came up, also a question raised by Honourable Mudabati. No, there have not been detailed cost analysis implications, because it's not possible to do that preemptively. As the bill says, each year there would be a review in terms of determining and declaring what qualifies as critical infrastructure, and then also what the specific security measures need to be at each one. And they wouldn't be the same at each site. And so it's only once those specifics have been determined that you can know the cost implications. So those would change from year to year. And there's no way for me or any economist, no matter how complex and advanced their model might be, to arrive at a specific figure as to what that would look like, because it depends on previous evaluation and determination process.
Just on that issue, maybe just a follow-up, but for instance, the baseline for the running of the costs of the board or the committee, you haven't considered that just to get an indication?
No, that also has not been done, because that would also depend on the system that the ministry sets up in terms of the process for the appointments of the members of the board. And if they fit within, you know, the PSA framework, what labels. Those are details that I don't believe it's appropriate for the legislature to determine. That actually is an executive function, as Honourable Aramatakane was at pains to emphasize that space being there for the discretion of the executive. So no, in terms of the board and the crossing, that's not there either. And actually, because of, I'm going to come to the details now, because of the composition of the board in terms of various of people from various backgrounds, some of them will not carry cost implications because they will already be state employees. But that will become clear when I come to that list in answering the questions, which actually is the next question also posed by Honourable Ramatakani about why this role of determining and declaring critical infrastructure would be formed outside of the executive. And the key question was, who are these people? And it links to Honourable Marcus' question about people who are best placed to do the job and not civilians. If you'd indulge me, I didn't include that detail in my PowerPoint, but I think this would be useful in answering those questions just to give us the details. So just answer the question, who are these people, and are they best placed to do their job? So the bill in clause 5, around the composition of the board, states that the board will consist of 12 members comprising of the following persons: two persons from the Crime Intelligence Division of the SAPS, one person from the Cyber Crimes Unit of the SAPS, three persons with expertise in state security, three persons from the Intelligence Division of the SA National Defence Force, one person with expertise in public works, a retired judge of the High Court, or a person with serious practical experience as attorney or advocate, one person with expertise in the financial services industry. So that's their backgrounds. Furthermore, a person who is referred to in that subsection would need to have at least 8 years' experience in intelligence, security, or defense, have adequate knowledge regarding the protection and identification of critical infrastructure, and would have undergone security clearance. And then there are also disqualification criteria, which are around fitness and properness, soundness of mind, being a citizen, etc. So I think that's alleviating some concern around the fitness and the qualification of the board to carry out these functions. Okay, I've answered the question about the assertion that there isn't carry through of items from Parliament to Parliament, which isn't true. There have been many bills that have carried across several parliaments. Honourable Reading Case mentioned one or two. We also know of the Sexual Offences Bill, which dragged for years and years, or the Amendment Bill, just dragged along, to date, this committee still has the SAPS Amendment Bill floating in the ether, and that's also been long on the agenda. So that is not a relevant point. Honourable Mudabashi, I answered the first question about cost implications if those were determined, and I explained why it's not possible to have an exact picture or costing yet, the whole process proceeding, arriving at a figure. And then she also had a question about comparison with the Amazini bill in terms of Rule 235. I'm not sure if I exactly understood what the central thrust of the question was, but I'll answer it as I understand it, and if I missed it, she can please clarify or bring me closer to her point. I think it's really been made clear that Rule 35 and other provisions that derive from it have no legal force, no legal effect. They've been severed, declared invalid, although the constitutional validity of the factors in 235A has not been evaluated, has been by implication. So noting that, and noting that the committee can use those factors as guidance or as guidelines, the general sentiment that's been coming through is that this bill may fall foul of the guiding principle that it preempts similar legislation soon to be introduced by the National Executive. Excuse me. I would argue that the key point in that structure that guides the committee is the word soon. You don't know if it's going to be soon. And so currently, until we have that detail or we have that time frame, there are no grounds to say that this will is undesirable because the military will soon introduce their rule. I would motivate very strongly that at the very least, we need to get the feedback, the detailed and clear feedback from the ministry to say what's their time frame, and if it is soon, well, then that's what it is. But right now, we cannot clearly or convincingly say that the ministry will soon introduce their legislation. So I'm not sure, Honourable Amoda, but if that's what you're hinting at in terms of Rule 235 and the Ambrosini Bill. Okay, so moving on to Honourable Make. Yes, he was saying that his understanding of the critical infrastructure is those sites that will be first attacked in case of war. That's part of it, definitely part of it. But as you also said, that there does need to be checking of international best practice in relation to this whole arena. And I strongly refute your arguments that the bill has not been checked against international best practice. That is one of the first points I made in my presentation. And as the brigadier from the Civil Secretariat mentioned in his remarks, she said that the international trend in terms of this environment is to move away from just national security considerations, but also sites and infrastructure that relates to service delivery and resource management. And that is contained in terms of the categories that give the first level of eligibility in determining political infrastructure. Like I said in the presentation, it is about, you know, areas that have to do with storage and development of warfare engines, defensive capabilities. But then we're also looking at energy infrastructure, you know, natural gas, petroleum, fuel. We're looking at generation stations, transmissions. We're looking at financial services, like I said. We're looking at the public health service. We're looking at physical distribution systems of economic interest, including airports, traffic movement systems, ports, waterways, railway stations. We're looking at, crucially, water. Water is about to become a very big issue in this country. Sources of water, reservoirs, aqueducts, filtration, feeding, treatment systems, various water systems. So, international best practice and those trends of considering more than national security are definitely contained in this book. So that box is in fact checked. Honourable Mfungo, I've touched on his point about how there cannot be a bill on top of another bill, and as I said, at this moment in time, there is no other bill, so there are no bills on top of each other. But he did make a very crucial point, which also came in towards the end of my presentation, where he made the statement that Parliament cannot abrogate its responsibility, which is absolutely 100% correct. Let's not forget that Parliament has three functions. It's an oversight body. It's a platform for debates on issues of national importance, representing the voices of the people, but also, centrally and at the same level of importance, is a law-making body. And the legislative sector has the power and the mandate to initiate and carry through the law-making process with or without linkage to the executive. It's not commonplace, it's not often practiced, but in theory it can happen. Parliament can run its own lawmaking agenda because it is really mandated by the Constitution, and we are the representatives of the people whose wishes and interests we should express in that lawmaking space. So this private names bill and all private names bills are a reinforcing and a buttressing of the responsibility of Parliament to legislate, which Honourable Mfungo very, very correctly indicated should not be abrogated. Moving on to the chairperson's questions, was the National Treasury consulted? It wasn't consulted because, as I said, the ability to arrive at cost analysis indications cannot be preempted before a preceding process goes through. So there wouldn't have been terribly much to consult the Treasury with. Who else consulted? I don't have the exact detail of who in total was consulted. But as I indicated, in general, because of the need to align this to international best practice, there were various research organizations, literature, and experts who were consulted to give input. And certainly in the previous round of the process in the previous parliament, there were many public submissions that we received that were substantially integrated into the revision of the bill in order for us to be tabled again before parliament. I think that is all the questions from the members. Chair, if I may, before we go on to the second round of questions, I think as a process point, I think the members may have grounds for concern, or at least there is an ambiguity on the exact position of desirability on the basis of the existence, known background process and an intention around this bill. And so there are no rational grounds currently for this bill to be immediately rejected as undesirable. At the very least, it can be parked. We can make the request to the ministry for the detailed and clear information of what's their time frame. If that reveals that it will soon be introduced, and in the course of the committee deliberating initially on this, I would argue, and then we get the other one on the table. If we see they're basically facsimile of each other, it's a win-win. But the simple initial point that must be made is that currently there are no grounds to evaluate this bill as being undesirable, because we do not know if the ministry will soon introduce the bill. So we need that information first. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Ms. Mabere, for your responses. We will go to a second round. We will start with Honourable Vierlingeis. Maybe just if you can get also just clarity from the Secretary on the issue of time frame. Because remember, at the beginning of the year, the then Acting Secretary indicated the bill is coming. We had further interactions and we wrote, and the bill were coming. We're now in November, so I just want to get an indication what is the exact time frames. And just to get an indication, maybe also from Parliament or the Secretary, because that's also featured in critical areas, the question of Treasury. I mean, it's a tick box. If you don't consult with Treasury, it's a problem, because you must have the financial implications. We as legislators, we can't approve something or start a process where there's no financial roadmap. So I just want to get back on that, the importance of that. Okay, let's go into Honourable Yellenhuis, and then Honourable Markey will go from that side. I think members are fine currently with tea. We won't have to go to tea now. Let's continue at the stage. Yes.
Thank you. I just want to make three brief points in supporting the discussion on desirability. I think if you do look at critical infrastructure in, for example, the United States and the EU, there are, what this bill needs to do, which is the case in the EU and the US, is highlight key sectors that are almost by default critical infrastructure. Your energy sectors, water provisions, financial services, etc. So it is clearly in line, as both the Secretary just indicated, that kind of trend is in line with what's happening across the world. Secondly, and to emphasize the point that Andre Mele made, legislation is the sole mandate of Parliament. The executive has the right to, under the Constitution and the law, and the rules, sorry, to initiate legislation, but the legislative process belongs here. And that's also why our Parliament provides members and a committee itself, with the powers to initiate, pass, and amend legislation. And it happened in the fourth Parliament when the Justice Portfolio Committee amended the Sexual Offences Act, where it was found wanting. And the Deputy Minister had indicated that they're busy with the process, but it was of such a critical, or it was so important that process be dealt with, that a committee initiated the legislation, passed it, and it became law, even though the Ministry had indicated that they had the same intention. And just on the issue of funding, the rules do not require that Treasury be consulted on private members' legislation. The rules simply require that an indication of the financial implications for the state should be indicated, or to be provided. It does not require an exact amount. And we see that with bills, for example, the protection of poor meat animals bill, which is before this parliament, where under financial implications, it simply says that there are expected financial implications for the state, and that process will go the normal budgetary process for appropriation, etc. And this bill clearly makes it the point that there will be implications for the state in memorandum in terms of setting up the board and for funding the board and its activities. So I think it is clear for us in considering this that there will be financial implications for the state. It becomes very difficult if we're trying to put a figure on it because we don't know what the members of the board will be paid. We don't know how often they will meet, those kind of things. But I think it is clear that there will be financial implications for the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Lillanes. Honourable Harkey.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think earlier on I suggested that the bill failed the desirability clause, according to me. And if we keep on debating that issue, we're just moving in circles. I then suggested that we close it because it fails that, and if it fails the desirability clause, there's no need for us to continue debating. It's a waste of time. Even if we get into the content of the bill, what would be the purpose? So I'm still emphasizing that we deal with the desirability, and I said the subject itself is desirable. But the other causes of disability kicks it out. So I'm suggesting, Chairperson, that the debate just stops here because we are not doing anything. It is not desirable. And I don't think I'm convinced. Honorable Mbele tried to explain that still it fails. So with due respect, Chairperson, my suggestion, if I've got a seconder, my suggestion is that we stop it now and then the other processes will follow.
I hear you, Honourable Mark, I hear you, but I think it's quite important from the principle of due deliberation that we give every member an opportunity. And we'll come to the point where we must, because remember we're still busy with the issue of desirability. So I just want every member to put the point, get the technical clarification, because even if we go, whatever Rudy decide on today or at a later stage, it will also enrich, you know, discussions, hopefully, in the next few months. But let's get members just to exhaust any technical issues, and then we'll give the opportunity. Right. Honourable Ramatlakane.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Yeah, no, Chair. Honourable Bele on the in responses does in fact confirm the knowledge and of course being a participant that the bill that was delayed should see itself sooner before the committee. So there's knowledge that there is a bill. Now, the soon issue that you're raising does not necessarily discard the fact that we have a knowledge about the existence of this bill in the review process. So it does not necessarily make or give a greater motivation for a preemptive strike, because this is a preemptive strike. In fact, it is said there was a May statement made, but now in August, so we're moving in. And then if I compare that with that statement and the Honorable Redland Hay statement, he said we cannot be held ransom by the process. We are moving in. Now the we, I suspect, is an attempt to make a collective statement to the committee, which is not at this stage. I think the we should be understood to be a we that represent the Democratic Alliance view on what they see and what they have presented. So that the we
we don't get trapped into the we being held ransom by that process.
Yes, just a point of clarity. When I say we, I mean Parliament as an institution, which has specific functions. I'm not saying this committee, it's a general we. I'm not referring to anyone in particular, and certainly not necessarily to the DA.
All right, thank you, Honourable Khan. You can move.
Okay, I understood that very clear. And I'm saying again, the we, insofar as this particular matter is concerned, is a we that demonstrates the agency as presented by Honourable Mbele to undercut the process that is on the table with the introduction of a private member bill. And I think, Honourable, if we speak straight, the process of lawmaking is a process of lobbying and getting everybody to the same side and then making law. You know that the process of making this law, and I ask the question of the policy for it to carry, for you to carry, you've got convincers. You're not going to be able to stop it through a court and then just accept it. You have to convince us. 23% would not make the bill pass Parliament if the rest of the Parliament has not been convinced of it. And it starts here. That's the process that I'm talking about. So, and I think if we are patient enough to each other, we would make a lot of progress. But let me just make this point. I made a suggestion, Honourable Mel, I don't know whether you're for or against. I'm saying our process of lawmaking today allows oral submissions to an extent that individuals and party are required or requested to make an oral submission and intervention in the lawmaking process, which you can have two bites of the cherry, if you like, as a member of this committee to intervention, and the party can also make intervention in terms of oral submission in the bill that is on the pipeline or not in the pipeline, on the table of the... I thought the Brigadier talked about cabinet subcommittee. That is going to cabinet subcommittee, which understanding the process, that's a clearing house for cabinet. So it's basically on the cabinet table. So the sooner issue that you, if you understand the sequencing, if the cabinet committee goes from cabinet committee to the cabinet, to inter-cabinet. So that's how this thing works. So you'll sooner, I think, is answered in that particular context. So is it not better that we say in your intervention, in your private member's intervention, that bite would get, you get that of ample opportunity, that process, in that for now, as it's presented here, there's a problematic, we accept, and I think you can see, Honourable Mbele, the problematic process that we find ourselves, that we can't act as if we don't know, oblivious to the fact that there is a bill on the table that has been reviewed over a period, and then we therefore ratify this one fast because that one is not quite in front of the committee. So it is, if we go down that road, it's an ingenious, really ingenious process and attention. We all can see that. So I want to make this the last plea, and I know that the people have been saying we're not talking to the detail of it, we don't go into that. For me, as I'm sitting here, we can't satisfy the desirability with the private members' bill whilst we know what we know and what we have been saying as a committee in terms of fast-tracking this particular bill that is here so far. Around the historical issue on Rumbele, we all agree that that piece of legislation has to be reviewed, has to be amended in order to reflect the current situation of the country, since outdated legislation. So hitting on that particular issue, we are not disagreeing on it. that it has to be. All we are asking, what we are waiting is how best to deal with that particular questions. So, and we say the best way to deal with that particular position is, as he suggested, that is already on the table, that your process be subjected to that particular process, because in any case, you know that process is on the table. Now, we can find a different way of subjecting it there, or we can find it a different way of subjecting it that way. And the other view is the route of Honorable Mate. So, my suggestion to you, Honorable Bello, was not even going to the route of us right now voting. I was suggesting that let's agree with the resolution that, yes, there is a problem. Yes, we accept that there is already a bill on the table. That information is here. Let's make that process a best process. So integrate this your process in that particular process. And therefore, we therefore, in that way, do away with this process, which is a process in isolation, but this process in integration. So we could even say that you have made, done some work here, that process will become part of the input in that particular process on the process of public participation. And you will sit on that table and address the community based on the on your document that you have already prepared in the gaps that exist, in the any gaps that are identifiable during that process. That is the genuine attempt to find a meeting point around this particular process. The other way is a simple way of saying, well, based on the facts before us, this is what we know, this is the preemptive, this is a way that we cannot necessarily do the work, we can't do the act in this particular way. The act is of a general application, all other things that have been said as a matter of not public knowledge, this and the other that you want to look in the part. It's out of the equation. We're doing this because we want to have the interest of the country at heart, and this is how it's going to run. The game is going to be played in this particular way. So, Tay, I'm saying, therefore, that I'm trying to suggest very strongly that as a committee, we go towards a resolution that say to Honorable Mbele, we have heard you. You have made the case that we need agency about the review process, and that let's now ask the department and the secretary to speak, who already knows and is also on the table of the cabinet committee, who already know that is going to happen. So then we then say, therefore, this subject, this process, will then be integrated as a part of input in that particular process when the public is consulted on this particular matter. And then we take a resolution on that basis, and that we close this part of the engagement. The other route is a simple route that requires by the rules. It's simply taking this deliberation and document completely off the table on the basis of a technical knowledge of things that you know. That was not my first option. But that's Honorable Margaret's option. But I'm still saying, Honorable Margaret said, we can take off through the resolution in the way that I'm suggesting. But let's work together in achieving that particular resolution with you, Honorable. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mulabasi.
I am extensively covered here about taking the matter to the relevant people, which is the department at this juncture. But the other thing that is making me very uncomfortable is the fact that Honorable Mbele does not want to tell us who are the people he consulted. Why is it kept under wraps? It makes me very, very uncomfortable, Chair. Thank you very much.
Right. I think all members will give on Mshongo. If there's any members on the right, then I'll give just national, I want to say national treasury. I want to give the secretariat and chefs an opportunity, and then also parliament, and then I'll sum up that we move forward. Yes, and also on mobility to respond. Yes.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair President.
No, Jefferson, I think as members we definitely need to refrain from some forms of, you know, what can I say, some forms of casting of aspersions, unnecessary aspersions on it. Let's focus on the content and the context. I don't mind, as members of this parliament, all of us are consulted by various people, and I think that is the reality. Any person of interest, and that's why then I personally even put it to some of the people who were even suggesting that uprising a student was threatened by some purpose elements. I said, no, you're missing the point. Revolution, when the revolution comes, you know, it concludes in Russia. He never thought that October 17th, revolution in Russia was going to happen in October 17th. He had faced it over a very long period of time. He could not come out and say, when Bolsheviks rose up then and mobilized the society of Russia, then somebody had a hand or some guy. It depends on the consciousness of the people. Now, I think here, what is at stake here is that we are briefed by the department and the brigadier, based on your request, Chairperson, brigadier responsible within the legal services of a police, has actually then outlined of the kind of the process that is currently happening. But that process is definitely concealed from us as party representatives. Anytime soon when we go to Parliament, I think I personally will have to make a presentation, either collectively as this committee or even individually as members of this committee, to the Minister of Police, for him to actually then, as part of us, ensuring accountability of ministers. We cannot have that process led by so-called ministers. And that's why then I even said, we wouldn't be having a gate. We can only if we did not allow ministerial driven process up to the point it went. Because it questions the integrity of members who were elected by our people to say, where were they? What kind of oversight role did they play to ensure that we don't come to that particular level? We cannot then have executives being law unto themselves. We have a right to demand them to tell us clearly where is the process, what is happening there, so that we stop this particular politicking around so-called national keyboard areas. So I think I also persuade you, Mr. Honorable Bell, to say it's very clear with me that the suggestions that you are appear to be raising, that to me, most of them are very key and fundamental. But it would be very naive, Mr. Chairperson, that we can actually begin to talk about details of the bill on top of another bill as the guidance received from the lady here, in terms of desirability. I think that's where then everything stops. But then the content and whatever is not actually then modified, because we will know, for example, if we were to say we wanted the board, we don't know whether then that in that bill they are suggesting the board or whatever. We will have a chance to say, this is what the framework we think can be the best framework that can actually ensure or meet the desired transparency that is required at the level that does not necessarily compromise national security of our own country. But to continue deliberating on this, I personally then agree that it would be just totally futile exercise. Because we don't know. We have got a responsibility to go to Parliament and demand the ministers concerned to say, we want you to come out and clarify this particular process, because it's long overdue. Rather than people, tomorrow then somebody will come and tell us that his own property is the national key point. We cannot allow that thing, Moses. We cannot allow it, I repeat, we cannot allow it. To allow it, it will mean that we are playing societal politics, which will undermine our own hard-fought democracy. We cannot allow it. Otherwise, it means even our existence within the walls of this parliament is just useless. Now, that's why then I was saying in previously, Mr. Jefferson, what are our experiences that we have had so far? or else who will actually go and have this blind loyalty to our superiors, as if then we were in a state of dictatorship. If we are in a state of dictatorship, yes, we can give everything to the executive. But in a democracy, we must apply democratic values and ensure that everything that is done is in line with the dictates of our law. And our constitution is a supreme law. There can never be any law that can be unravelled to that particular law. Anything outside of that is actually unlawful. So then, I am not therefore then rule out that all these other agencies that have actually made submissions to you, Jefferson, therefore the rights of South African citizens, because we see a particular abuse of National Key Point Act. Therefore the rights. We cannot even begin to catch our suspicions on them to be set forth freely. They have utilized courts to test the legality of what they have experienced. Now, let us then oblige to that and say, as public representatives, we actually then remain loyal and honest to our people. I think that's all that I wanted to say. So that we don't start to begin to say, what are the spooks saying and all those things. I don't care what they are saying. Spies are doing their own spy work. But if they do have spy work outside of the framework of law, that spy work is totally futile and self-defeating in nature. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mabunga.
Thanks, Chair. It is my humble appeal to you, Chairperson, that I think you need to guide us, because I have been listening to my colleagues presenting, but I can't see some of the presentation or presentations assisting us getting to what exactly what we need to do. Because of course we can speak very loudly, but if we do not come up with the suggestion that says this, I think we need to do and be accepted, I don't think we're getting anywhere. So that is my appeal, Chairperson, just to say, give us a direction. Thanks.
No, thank you, Honourable Member. I just wanted to ensure that there's opportunity for everybody to voice the concerns. I mean, there was a proposal made, but it's important that we get feedback and also give the sponsor of the bill an opportunity to respond, but also the technical issues. Before we go to Honourable Member, let's just get feedback from the departments at Parliament. What about you?
Thanks, Chair. I wanted to say something, but Honourable Riddle left, and I didn't want to say it when he was outside. He has this tendency of wanting to remind us of DA every time. And it's like I said the other day, it's not in the tradition of this committee. We know he's a member of the DA, and we are members of our political parties. He must refrain from every time reminding us of the ADA, because we can also say ANC every time. I don't think it's right. We are members of the committee here together, working together. He must just try and refrain. And to remind him, the DA is an opposition party in this country. The ANC is governing this country. Thank you.
I accept what the member says, and I understand completely, and I agree. It's just difficult that when I then say we, it comes across as I'm speaking on behalf of the committee, and when I don't say we, then where is it? So I add it simply so that it comes across that I'm not speaking on behalf of the committee, because I cannot speak on behalf of the committee. So it's not to remind members of my political affiliation, I think that much is clear. And it's also not to reduce the issues to partisan issues, it's just to make sure that members understand I speak on behalf of me or my party and not the committee. Because in some committees it has been the tendency that they've used we, and when it doesn't represent the views of the committee as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Civilian Secretary for Police.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the timelines, Chair, it's common knowledge to all present here that we do have a product on the table. We were here recently to speak on our first quarterly report, and it was reported to the committee that there is a bill and where the process of the bill is currently. With regards to that bill, we have consulted extensively with various key stakeholders within departments, and as well as DEFCON, the JCPS Crystal Committee, the JCPS Cabinet Committee, and currently we just were waiting direction from the Minister, because it was something that the JCPS Cabinet Committee asked the Minister specifically to do. So that's where it is right now. But it is on our APP for this financial year. So...
Did you consult the Treasury?
Coming to that, so that's where we are with the bill at the moment. So it is our intention to bring that bill before the end of the financial year. Besides that, that is out of our control concerning the bill, because even with regards to the extensive consultation, that was also very time-consuming, and that was because we wanted to do a proper job, not to exclude any key stakeholders from the process. In terms of Treasury, Chair, we have met with Treasury several times, and we've addressed concerns that were raised by them on issues of funding of this bill. And so currently we do have an estimate of what the bill will cost and who is responsible for what part of this, of implementation of this bill. Issue also concerning the remuneration of the council members was also discussed. Treasury has a table that they work according to, with different levels for whether it's judges or the time frames that the board members spend at meetings and preparation for meetings. So that's all been taken into account. So at this point, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That also assists us. Saps, anything bring it here from your side?
I just support what Ms. Bell said. We are working absolutely together on this project, so yes.
Brigadier, yes, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chief. My contribution, I can only limit to the process. What the committee has done this morning is to consider the in principle whether they want a bill like this. The next step would be for the committee is to consider whether to vote on a motion of desirability. In other words, the chairperson would propose a motion of desirability for the bill. And then the committee will have to then vote on that going forward. Thank you, Chair.
So that will be in terms of process, written proposal submitted to the committee. So today, in principle, we cannot take a decision, but at the next meeting, then the formal proposal will be tabled. Is that the process?
Chair, a formal notice will be read, a motion will be read out to the committee, and then the committee will then vote on it as to whether they agree with the motion of desirability or not.
Right, thank you very much for that clarification. So we'll give Honourable Mbele an opportunity to respond.
Thank you again, Chairperson, and thank you to the members for their questions and inputs in that second round. I'll just take the point by point, and I noted them. Honourable Makhe was quite clear in his position, so I don't think I need to engage necessarily with that. That he's quite clear that it's undesirable from his perspective, deliberation is around me making the argument that it is. Honourable Ramachandran came back to the point that was, as you put it this time, that the delays in the ministry-driven process do not justify what he called a preemptive strike. But it's actually the other way around, is that the delays in that process do not give grounds for determining undesirability of the current bill that's before the committee. That's my argument, is that currently there are no grounds to make the assessment that this bill is undesirable in light of both the principle and substance of the bill, which we all agree is in place, and invalid, and on more technical grounds in terms of the guiding factors that derive from the suspended sub-rule. So that's what I'm saying, is that as of this point before the committee, there are no grounds on which to assess this rule as being undesirable. He also made a point again that the introduction of this bill and carrying it forward would be undercutting of the process, which was echoed by Honourable Mfongo again of the point about the bill being on top of another bill. And I have to say again, Chairperson, right now there is nothing on the table except for this. Before today, there was nothing on the table. So there's nothing on top of anything, there's nothing being undercut, because this is the initiation of the only process, as far as this committee is concerned, on these issues. And he did make a very interesting argument about this point in relation to the cabinet process currently, which, if it is true, would actually light me, because he said that, in essence, the facts of the cabinet process, as we heard, you know, it's received the certificates from the state law advisor, if I recall that correctly, and it's currently before a cabinet subcommittee. There's consultation with DEFCOM, JCPS, cluster, and cabinet committees, and so on. But Honourable Rabatana's argument was that the fact that it's in the cabinet process means that it's on the table for the committee. Which is, especially, I would argue, false, because we're talking about the executive and the legislative sector, whose processes run in their own spheres. But, Chairperson, I will say, if there is any strand of truth in that argument, I would be very, very keen to start receiving paperwork from the Leader of Government Business as to the Cabinet's deliberations as they relate to Parliament, because if it carries this way from legislature to the legislature, then it must carry the other way as well. So that's tenuous arguments about how things carry across different realms. But if they do, and we accept that here, then the Honourable Desi Prinz and I will start having lots of correspondence on various issues. He also made the point that this bill represents a process in isolation, which is also false. I mean, this is a legislative process. We are a committee of parliament which deals with formatting and deliberation on legislation. There's nothing isolated about this. It's like saying that if the committee has a hearing on issue, it's isolated from what happens in the House. No, they're all linked together. On the Honourable Member's proposed process going forward, he said that they've heard me, which I do appreciate. I hope that I have received an open and attentive hearing without any preconceived sort of decisions, and he said we should wait for the Cabinet to conclude and introduce their bill, which I assume means a suspension of some kind of this process, or to take it off the table via a committee resolution. Chairperson, I don't think that's the grounds, because as Ms. Swartz has outlined, there's a very clear process as to what the committee has to do with private members' bills. It's introduced by the member, there's deliberation, and then the committee, in considering those factors, then has to assess the desirability. So that motion, the tabling of that motion and the taking of that vote is unlikely to happen today, but that is the mandated and stipulated next step in the process. I cannot accept that we go into limbo with this, just waiting for the ministry. And if it is to come off the table of the committee, then it must happen via the stipulated process as outlined by the parliamentary legal advisor. It is somewhat encouraging to hear the indication from the director that the bill that's currently in the cabinet process would come to the committee before the end of this financial year, barring unexpected factors, because it's on the current ACP. So that's a rough indication
of time frame before the end of the financial year basically means before the end of March. And I mean, given that there's November left, it's not going to come to calendar year, certainly. So we're looking at the first 2.5 months of the next calendar year. So that's fine. That's an indication. But then the argument still remains that the committee must then make up its mind whether that qualifies as being soon, and if that is substantial and compelling grounds to take this off the table now, or what to do with it. My argument as proposer of this bill is very clearly that we keep it on the table, we integrate it into the committee agenda, whatever opportunity there is for the remainder of this calendar year, or being picked up from the beginning of the next calendar year, and when the ministry has their bill, then dovetail integrates, because chances are much of the substance will overlap. Yes, I think that answers all of the questions and inputs.
Thank you very much, members. I think the good news is we're not going to, I think, continue the minutes.
Thank
you. Because we've run really out of time, so we'll continue with that next week. Yes, members, thank you very much for the process and the contribution. I'll sum up and then we will proceed. Yeah, I think it's a good initiative if members, you know, come with private members' bills. I think it enriches the process, it's in the bill, and I think it's also the work of the legislature to do that. So I think from a parliamentary perspective, we welcome that, and it's also important of highlighting important issues that is in the public domain that needs attention. I think there's agreement from all committee members, and I think we discussed it also earlier this year, for the need to deal with the critical infrastructure bill, and of course the amendment of 1980 Act. All members from all sides indicated that it's reminiscent of the apartheid era, and we must move on. I think we also heard today from SAPS as well and the civilian secretariat that there's also a new approach in the world where they also in other jurisdictions include other aspects as well. So the question in terms of our understanding of the issue at hand, what do we do now? We had different views today. We had the presentation from the initiator, Mr. McKenna. Thank you very much also for his hard work. It's a long process and we welcome his contribution in also contributing to the debate. There is also other views from the other side indicating that there is currently also process underway. It's also being indicated to the committee. There was also technical issues raised during this morning's debate in terms of the financial implications, the consultation process with other parties. So that is really where we should focus, and I think if we look at what we have this morning, and I feel like I've looked at the different inputs, it's quite clear at this stage in terms of the desirability not going to carry, in terms of just the input that we received from floor. There was, I think, a middle option from Onmura Makani to say, well, if the bill could be withdrawn, and we are awaiting the further process that will also assist. That was the one little option, but I think the sponsor indicated there's a process and we must go through that process. I think the consensus approach is not on the table anymore. And there was a proposal from Honourable Marky earlier. In terms of process, of course, we must consider the desirability in terms of a formal motion that is tabled. So I think in terms of the consensus I did here today, the motion of desirability won't carry due to the reasons given this morning. And I think what we'll do at the next meeting is just to then formally come with a written proposal to the committee and for formal motivation, a formal second, and then we move from there and also come to a proposal. So that would be the right route to go. Yes, Honourable Bailey.
Can I just get clarity and confirmation that in that formal tabling of the motion, the mechanism for ascertaining the position of the committee would be through a vote by members?
Yeah, that is the usual process, as I understand the parliamentary process, yes. If need be. If there's no consensus, of course, there will be a but. That's correct. Members, is that fine? Honorable Takani?
What did you say, Chair, about the formal motion, a written motion? I understand from the legal advice that the motion should be read. And then, based on that, the committee will then decide. So, now, you're saying that has to happen in the next meeting.
Then we can take a break, but we're running out of time to be prepared by the secretariat and then come back and then deal with it. So the other option would be to, on Wednesday, as the third item, just deal with it. Honorable market.
My suggestion would be that we take a break. I think it's simply a paragraph, isn't it? Then we get over with it.
Oh, there's the firm proposal that we deal with it now. So let's ask the secretary. Yes, Honorable Mayor.
Sorry, Chair. May I make a counter proposal? I think it is a good idea to postpone the formal motion and the conclusion of the outcome of that to the next meeting, if only because in the interests of comprehensive processing by the committee. I mean, we've had just a presentation. I think it would be fair and appropriate for the members to get the next 4 days to ruminate, chew over, and just let the issue sink in. And then we can come in with fresh minds next week with the full motion.
Honourable Ram Chikani?
No. Honourable Chair, with respect, the subject has been canvassed thoroughly. We have had a discussion and we have read through the bill itself. The issue about delay is academic. I mean, the issue is that as we sit here, we're quite clear about the notion of desirability. And I want to say that let's get a paragraph that the motion be read, and let's vote on the matter, and then that's it.
Three hands. Honourable Mark. Council proposal?
Chairperson, it's just that if you then proceed that way, that the paragraph in white, it's not just yes or no, but includes the motivation for why we're going in a particular route. Thank you.
Honourable Chairman?
No, sorry. No, I don't believe in that it will help us to put the matter to a vote. I think here it would be wise in this situation. This is my serious plea to say, let it be crafted, forwarded to you not later than Monday. Then we get it circulated to all of us so that it cannot necessarily be a question just of one paragraph and all that, but it will have a thorough motivation so that it actually captures the imagination of the executives involved. Otherwise, if we can just do it quickly here, I think we will be actually then not doing sufficient justice to the matter at hand.
And Honourable McCarney?
If we want to recycle what has been discussed here, there's a process of getting the hands handed out for members for that. But for now, the issue here is not necessarily to recycle. The advice is very simple. It's a simple paragraph that we need to talk about here. And let the parameters meant to be read. It won't even take 5 minutes to drop something like that and for the committee to vote on the matter.
Members, let's just take a 15-minute break for tea and so on, so we'll come back 12:15 to deal with the resolution. Thank you.